Let's start. First of all, hi and welcome. Welcome to the very first English-speaking meeting of the Stillwater Book Club. This book club exists in Varna since February, so it's almost a year now. We meet two times a month, sometimes one time a month, it depends, in the library called Yasnaya Polyana, but we usually speak in Russian. And then we came up with an idea, why don't we speak in English? Because some of us know some English, some of us speak some English, some better than others, but still. And why don't we just practice our English skills while discussing books and literature and everything that is related, everything that comes up while talking about books. And so we came up with this idea of an English-speaking meeting, and luckily we have this perfect location for it. Thank you, Diana, for having us here. Thank you, Shakespeare and Friends, for hosting this meeting, and we truly hope that with your interest and participation, this will become a regular thing, and we hope to invite more people, maybe native speakers, but not necessarily. We are welcoming everybody, no matter what language you originally speak in. We welcome you here to speak in English about books. And today our topic is Ray Bradbury, and specifically his book Fahrenheit 451.
I'll just point out I've got two other
books if you're
here.
Interested in
the,
exploring
A Graveyard for
further.
Lunatics. I like that title. And this one is the Toynbee Connector.
What so, I can do with other book?
Here.
If you're interested in exploring Ray Bradbury further, you can just buy one
you
of those books and go on with reading Bradbury. Interestingly, when I was researching for the meeting, I came up, I found a quote by Bradbury, who was saying that the only science fiction he ever wrote was this one.
And he doesn't like that people call him scientific writer.
He
said, I'm just a writer, not science
fiction
writer.
He, as far as I understood, he prefers to call his fiction fantasy fiction. While actually Martian Chronicles may be one of the, maybe one of the first examples of what we now call science fiction. And it's interesting that he himself didn't see it as science fiction. On the other hand, he did see Fahrenheit as a science fiction. We today see it... Okay, we will discuss how we see it today, because it's a complicated... It's a dystopia. It's a science fiction, probably. However, okay,
it's more science fiction than other Bradbury. Okay.
Okay. Okay. I just wanted to make a brief introduction about the creation of the story before we move to the story itself. If you know that, please stop me, but if you don't, maybe you will be interested to know that actually what we now call Fahrenheit 451 grew out of four short stories. Bradbury himself writes this in an afterword to the book, and he describes all the four stories. The first was called Bonfire. I imagined the long literary thoughts of a man on the night before the world was coming to an end. And he was thinking about different writers and painters and artists and who not. And then there was a story called Bright Phoenix, in which a town librarian is threatened by the local patriot bigot, in regard to a few dozen books aching to be burned. So the idea of burning books and government or some structures trying to burn books appears in this short story. And
pedestrian also?
Yes, later, but it's a bit
okay.
Another one, yes. In this one, actually, what appears, apart from the idea of burning books, is this idea that people in town where the library is situated are keepers of the book. So when this patriot moves around town, he realizes that actually if he burns books, it won't help him because people are keeping the books inside their heads. So they're like keepers, bookkeepers, but in a different sense. Then there was The Exiles, and The Usher 2, actually. He wrote a short story, Usher 2, where the hero collects all the intellectual book burners of Earth.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and then there was The Pedestrian, based on a real story that happened to him. He was walking with a friend, talking, and a police car stopped by, and a police officer asked them what they were doing, and Bradbury replied that they were like putting one leg in front of the other, talking, things like that. Police officer seemed a bit confused, made some further questions. Bradbury said that, well, we do it for pleasure, don't have anything, and if we were to rob someone, we would rather drive a car, we are not a threat. A police officer just in case told them not to do it again, whatever that meant, and drove off. And a story, The Pedestrian, was based on this accident. It described a world where pedestrians were regarded as high risk, a threat. They were denied their right to walk, actually. And then there is this extremely famous story of Jan Ray Bradbury, who just had a baby daughter and a tiny apartment, and he needed a place where he could work, and wandering around the Californian University, he came by this room where you could rent a typewriter, and he went home, got a bag of dimes, and spent 9 days in this room writing what was later called The Fireman. It was actually not a novel, but a novella. 25
penny per half an hour.
Yes, that's correct. And 25,000 word novella. And it was already about a fireman, people burning books being a threat, etc. But what happened later, well, at least I didn't know. There was this later, several years later, 53 years later, Ian Ballantyne suggested to Bradbury to publish the book if he could make it twice the volume. So not 25,000 words, 50,000 words. And Bradbury did it. He went back to the typing room and he added the same amount of the words, and it became Fahrenheit 451. But They did not find a publisher. Ballantine, I'm not sure. I'm not sure why, but Ballantine didn't publish it himself. They wanted to publish it by parts, and they were trying to find a publisher for the book by parts or entirely. And then that the second great new thing occurred. A young Chicago editor, minus cash but full of future visions, saw my manuscript and bought it for $450, all that he could afford, to be published in issues number 2, 3, and 4 of his About to Be Born magazine. The young man was Hugh Hefner. The magazine was Playboy, which arrived during the winter of 1953-1954 to shock and improve the world. The rest is history. From that modest beginning, a brave publisher in a frightened nation survived and prospered. When I saw Hefner at the opening of his new offices in California a few months ago, he shook my hand and said, "Thanks for being there." Only I knew what he was talking about. So this book first appeared naturally in Playboy. And then it was published as a book, and then republished, and then republished, and then republished, and at some point in, let me check, at some point in 2003, Bradbury himself wrote an introduction to the 50th anniversary edition of this book. In this introduction, he writes that over the years he saw some things that now he would have done differently, but still in 50 years he resisted and he never changed anything in the book. And Ray Bradbury left us in 2012. He was 91. He wrote more than 500 short stories, novels, plays, scripts, and poems. And this book actually was became a base for a movie by François Truffaut, which I didn't yet see, but I bet it's outstanding.
May I ask, what was his personal life? Was he married, children, was he?
Yes, well, at the point he was married, and at a point when he was writing the first half, they had just a newborn daughter, and he needed a quiet space for work, and that's how he ended up in this type of room in University of California.
But he wasn't an extreme liver. He didn't live extremely, such as, oh, I don't know, you know,
as a bon
Vonnegut and Hunter Thompson.
No,
Thompson.
I didn't read anything like that. No, he was very industrious, as far as I know. He was very, maybe a workaholic. He really worked a lot and no stories about him, I don't know, running around drunk or something.
Super.
So it's just
okay.
work. Well, you don't write 500 texts just like that. Of course, he had a very long life and a very productive writer life, but still 500 is a lot, even if...
And he basically lived in California?
He moved with his family to Los Angeles in 1934 when he was 14. And since then, as far as I know, he just stayed in California.
Okay. I worked in magazine The World of Science Fiction, and we had interview with Ray Bradbury where he said, I remember it. I always resist the death.
I always resist
against death. I resist it with my books, I resisted with my children. I resisted with all my life.
Resist against?
Against
depression?
Death.
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 Mm-hmm. Ah, death.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Death.
Ah. Okay.
Yes.
But.
And so after this short introduction, I hope I did not bother you too much with all my solo talking. I suggest we move to discussing the book itself. And actually we kind of already started while we were discussing our different experience of moving around the world and taking or not taking our libraries with us. And this appears to be a very important trend nowadays, because, well, I know for sure that in this room we have two absolutely opposite opinions on that. For example, Andrew and Lena prefer not to keep any paper books at all and read only e-books, smartphones, tablets, whatever. On the other hand, me and we're not introduced.
Tanda.
Anna?
Tanda.
Me and Tanda decided to move our libraries to our new homes, and it was an adventure for both of us, but still we did. So, and there are, of course, people in between, somebody who took some of the books, most of the books, for various reasons, and we've been discussing this already in our in one of our Russian-speaking meetings. People in this transition from paper books to e-books, since it's still in progress, people take very different positions in this spectrum. Some already moved totally to e-books, some cling to paper books, some move somewhere in between and balance two formats. And that's extremely interesting, extremely to look at that, because so far I at some point I thought it was okay, there are suggestions that it is a matter of age, that older people tend to stick to paper books and younger people. Yes! And then here we are, Andrew and me. He's
60.
I'm 30, so twice my age. He reads only e-books. I read e-books at some point more, at some point less, but some of them, but I strongly prefer paper books. I moved my library here, and every occasion I get, I prefer.
Could be geography. Seriously.
Maybe geography. Maybe culture you live in, not necessarily
people
the culture.
Afraid. I said people afraid to move. Hmm? People afraid of new something new. But that's not
No.
It's a matter of money.
Yeah.
And
you obviously like paper.
No, I
like
the
paper books, but when I moved to Bulgaria, I didn't have any other choice than, you know, get the e-books.
Same
because
thing.
It's not much bookstores with the English books.
Now you know.
Now I know.
Right. But she was afraid to move. I told you a couple of times. Listen, order on the internet, she said, oh, why? I have to, I go to ShopRite and buy a book wherever I want.
Because I like it. Not because I'm afraid of e-book. I like it to hold the book in my hand.
I don't think it's fear. But
don't talk about me.
I don't think it's fear, but we have to admit that the process of accepting a new technology takes time, and for different people it takes different time.
Yeah.
Some people get used to new technologies very fast, some people take their time, and well, we are all different, and well, nothing to
I don't
about.
Understand that it's about accepting new technologies. As I understand, all or nearly all of people here read e-books, but not all of them
like.
Forget. No, most people like ebooks, but most people yet prefer just book as
paper
book. With paper, and we discussed the fact that people move a lot of books with them, even if they move more than once. We discussed it a bit with Tanda, and I got an interesting point that it's about feeling at home.
Yes.
Right.
So probably it would be better if you talk about it because it's your position. But it was an interesting understanding.
No,
I totally agree. I could totally relate because for me, I just couldn't imagine myself living in a place with no books. It's just it was unimaginable. It just was not an option. Like,
I tried.
All.
I tried it 6 years.
I didn't even try. I'm weak.
And after that, I said no. I want to live with my library. Okay, it's okay. It's question of money. Okay. It's a question of some forces, okay, but for me it's important, and for me it's a component of cozy, maybe it's it's something stable.
But
I've never read an e-book.
Never, ever.
Never, really?
Never,
wow.
Never. But then I'm surrounded. Mm-hmm.
Well,
yeah, paper.
You don't need to.
No,
need
I've
to.
Never read.
But actually, this is a very interesting point where I'd like to move closer to the story itself. Some people... Okay, maybe it's again a specter. A book is, on the one hand, an object. On the other hand, the content.
Digital,
the information in it.
And
sensoric.
And sensoric.
Yes. So
yes.
On the
so
one
bad.
Hand, it's
mm-hmm.
it's the form,
mm-hmm.
An object,
mm-hmm.
something you can touch, you can smell,
mm-hmm.
you can
tactile.
Yes. And on the other hand, content, information, something
mm-hmm.
that it's gets inside your brain. Mm-hmm. And so the specter, people choose their position towards paper book according to their position in this specter. So if an object is more important to them, they tend to paper book.
Mm.
If it's content they're interested in, they
point.
Tend to ebook. And again, we balance between the two.
Mm-hmm.
So if you're for some reason need a book to refer to, it's an album, it's a textbook, probably you will prefer it in paper. If you read it, especially if you read it just once, you're not planning to reread it, you can choose an ebook. And here, where I'd like to turn to the books of, to Bradbury, it appears to me, and tell me what you think about it, that in this world, books as an object, as objects, sorry, are not important at all. They are fought for their content, for the information contained in them, for the dangerous thoughts that can grow out of the content and stick to people's minds and maybe change them or make them less easy to
maybe
govern.
To control. And
yes.
Mm-hmm.
So the value of a book as an object is completely lost. It is viewed only as a source of information, and as such, it is burned.
You're saying that's Bradbury's viewpoint?
Well, no.
No.
I don't think so, but it's kind of my interpretation of what's happening there. People in this world are not, like me and Tanda, are not interested in books as an object. They don't feel the need to touch books,
mm-hmm.
to see books, to possess books.
Mm-hmm.
It's absolutely out of the question. They just don't know, probably they just don't know they could. Okay. So
it's more a problem, and Bradbury speak about it, that people not interesting, not only object book, people don't interest in anything about
what's
book.
Worse, what's worse, they are not interested in the content either.
Yeah.
Exactly, perfect.
Lovecraft
is
about sexes.
but
as a citation of Bradbury.
Probably.
So in the library.
Not
all people? All of them?
Another great point.
All characters in the book, in Bradbury's book, all characters from the main to just to anybody. They're only talking about content, and no one fills the book as an object. Just not any character in the book at all. It's not discussion about books as objects.
Of course,
yes.
Because
exactly.
The condition of this book, book as an object, is too rich for all. Who try to preserve the information, try to preserve even information, of course. It's not first time. In the history of real world, it was something like it. In the medieval times, when for people which are not priests, is forgotten to read and to read Bible too.
Forbidden
to read at all, and forbidden read Bible. Absolutely, it was dangerous, and if someone knew that the people who were not priests, not monks,
mm-hmm.
etc., read the Bible, it was crime.
Mm.
It's a real story, yes, a real history, yes.
Not
essential. It's medieval times. I may check it, but it's not important now.
Okay.
It was something medieval.
No, medieval.
Yes, of course. It's before Renaissance, because Renaissance
mm-hmm.
is as a question. Humanity lived in this condition too.
Yeah. Mila.
No, I mean the idea of his book, it's no information at all. I mean, no, even possession the book, it was a crime. Possession, not reading the book.
Reading. Yes.
And if you have four-wall TV room, that's YouTube, Facebook, Twitter, wherever mass media we have now, before it was radio and television.
How many flat screens TV you got in your house? Tell me, just three or four?
In my house,
yes,
two.
Two.
Oh,
yeah. About four.
You're
yeah.
going there?
We got four walls, yeah. Seriously, yeah. So, we're war on this one.
Yeah, but one almost I never turn on.
Yeah, right.
Okay. And I prefer it the book
so
than watch TV.
So you're not
believe me.
You're not Mildred.
No.
You're Mila, not
absolutely
Mildred.
Not. I'm not Mildred, and
good to know.
Seashell in my. I don't like it.
You don't have iPhone. No, you don't.
Yeah, I do have iPhone, but no ear.
Are they seashells? No. Oh my God.
And actually, Andrew made an interesting point. People are not interested in books as objects, and what's worse, they're not interested in the content, but not all of them.
Not all people. Stratification
all
of
people.
Society, that's
not
what it is.
Not all people. At some point of the book, we find out that there are indeed people who are interested in books. But again, this is very interesting. They are not interested in books as objects as well.
Yeah.
Moreover, they take this to extreme by preserving the content without preserving the books themselves.
But you know,
yes, because it's impossible.
It's going back to Vedic times. You got Pandit, who remembers all Bhagavad Gita and Mahabharata.
Yes.
So you know what? So
all the minstrels and.
Vedas in themselves, they're supposed to be recited. They're not supposed to be printed. You can't print it in India. There'll be no medium, no paper. It's too moisture.
I met a meeting like this, like maybe 10, 15 years ago, and guy named Bezos sitting with the friends and said, I'm going to sell a book on the internet. And everybody laughed and said, who need a book? You're kidding.
Yeah.
And what become from?
I thought so. I remember this one.
And what become from a company, which is that like we are here,
selling
biggest
books.
Company in the world, and start from a book, selling the books.
Yeah.
And if you say nobody interested in the books in India, probably part of the India, who read the books and become part of
true.
This company.
Yeah, that's true.
And now the biggest company in the world.
Yeah.
$1 trillion.
I do remember that moment when I thought, you know what, I was sitting in downtown.
Laughing, everybody laughed.
So,
Barnes and Noble, Barnes and Noble, and a huge,
they gone.
Huge
they all gone.
Store,
so,
bookstore
in
they
America gone.
Like a domino.
So I remember in Toronto I got Chapters, the huge one, and actual one called the biggest bookstore, and it was true. The store was so huge, it was a couple of blocks.
Wow.
It's unbelievable, seriously, can't believe when I saw it, right? So they closed about 2 years ago.
And interesting, they built a bookstore combined with a library and a cafe.
Yeah.
And you can spend whole day in this.
India?
With
no,
a smell.
In North America.
With a smell in this store, you just walk in and you are like in a paradise. Because smell of the new books. Just new printed books.
That's right, yeah.
And you can read, you can sit and read any book you want, brand new.
But didn't help. Our chain was
and nobody cried.
No, nobody cried. What you guys had, Barnes and Nobles, it's still, is it still around? Or?
I'm not sure that this is nobody cried.
Close.
I can't believe, believe that it happened, but there are yet quite a lot of bookstores with about same conception, at least it's full St. Petersburg of bookwagons. I know at least three of them made by about same conception. Of course they are much smaller, but yet it's about some floors of books and cafe and place where you can sit and read any of the books. And they work and they open new bookstores. And
it's interesting that the conception, that now a conception of possession of books, is changing. The previous was books for all. Now the paper books for rich people. It's for people who may allow themselves. It's interesting. And
because we again are back to ancient times where a book was a sign of
it's
welfare.
It's interesting. And it's for me, I think it's good because it's give a chance of paper books. The interest of typographic science. Not only for books. I said I worked in the magazine, the world of science fiction, and I worked it from 203, and now in December, it is the last number of this magazine because
15 years.
Yes, because. because the paper magazine is not.
It's
have no financial sense, absolutely. And after this year, it will be closed.
And it's longer Russian.
It had Everts. It was the best. Best science fiction magazine in Europe for Eurocon. 2014. Okay. And now in Russia have no science fiction magazines. After closing the world of science fiction.
And
long Russian. War with one page digest,
really,
like in Bradbury book.
I was so curious, how could you summarize War and Peace? Just in one page.
Beautiful.
You wanted to say something?
Yes. So, it's strictly personal opinion. We're here 7 months.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And there's a digital divide, which is Atlantic Ocean.
Mm-hmm.
States and Canada, North America, and Europe. It's two different worlds. Our New Jersey friends already said about death of Barnes & Nobles. In Canada was two stores, Indigo and the other one, Chapters. So anyway, so when we came here, the first impression was, what the hell is it? Knizharnitsa? Here? In 2018?
Uh-huh.
Really? It's not possible because nobody reads it. Vitaly already said. You know what? They try to marry bars and coffee shops with bookstores. Didn't help. But it started in 2001, 17 years ago. So the book in States and Canada was dead like for a decade already. It's dead. Nobody reads it. Period.
I would like to add, it's what I saw in recent, like
summertime. It's what
7 years, 10 years.
Yeah.
Books, publishing books, become most important books published on the market.
Yeah.
Political books. Nothing.
Of course.
Political.
And it's still
because I saw on the TV a lot of political broadcasting, and I'm interested in politics, and I see as soon as guys from CNN or Fox invite some politician to ask his opinion, immediately this politician comes with a book he's published, and they publish every year, and I just thought, who's reading this book? But when I went to this market and I saw the books, actually a lot of bookstores still exist in the United States, but smaller, not like Barnes & Noble. You see this huge amount, these political books, and they just sit like this.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, really,
yes.
No less.
So they don't publish any fiction, but
No, nothing.
Nobody reads them.
Because everybody's become so
political. Of course
political.
They published fiction, but
no bestsellers. You don't see bestsellers, not involved, for example, Trump, you're not seeing anything.
Another thing, the whole trend started sometimes in the 90s.
Yeah.
So there is a concept called garage sale. So what you're doing, it's Saturday morning, right?
Yeah, what Mila described.
Exactly. So you're driving around the neighborhood, sometimes we're a very rich neighborhood, and what people do, just throw people on a driveway, sometimes a dollar, sometimes for nothing. Now, back in the 90s, in 92, 3, 4 or something, the trend started with books. Encyclopedias, huge books. Nobody wanted them. Nobody wanted them at all. So
Britannica for $10.
Britannica for $1. Nobody cared. So you know what? Sometimes in the 90s you could have find anything you want pretty much. So because we used to live in quite rich neighborhood. So and we knew these people. Nobody cared. Somebody dies.
You just throw it out.
They just put it on the driveway. That's it. Take it out.
Okay, so here's the question.
Okay.
Did he, 50 years ago, predict the future?
Yes. May I say something?
Absolutely.
No. The pedestrian.
So,
it is I.
Yeah.
It is I and her.
In some aspects.
Same thing. So police asks you, what the hell are you doing without a car? Are you okay? Do you need
in Canada?
Of course. Do you need help?
Okay.
Moreover, I caught myself on a thought that you're really a traceable person because all these routes are predictable. Because where are you going? From your garage to the store to buy goods, right?
Yes.
And then you go into work if you're driving. That's it. We got a habit, we used to walk to the lake, to Ontario Lake, right? So, but it was so rare, again, people stopped and stared at us. Sometimes, yeah, we got companions, but not. So what was written in before 53, as far as I understand.
Before.
The pedestrian.
Late 40s.
Exactly. So it was bleak future, and it was in 90s in Canada and the States, because I knew it. In States, it's more sort of a strict, in Canada more lenient, because we didn't have that much crime that you guys.
Right.
But still the same thing. So what are you guys doing? You okay? Need help?
We have a police would ask if I walk like a midnight on the street of New York.
Can I
of
help
course.
You?
Of course,
yes.
Yeah. They do. It's a real thing.
New York? Oh.
No, New York. New York, it's a different story.
Different.
In New York, it's a lot of people walking, of course. But, you know, small towns.
Suburban.
Yeah. Yeah.
So we are slowly moving towards four walls, TV screens.
No, it's already here. It's already there. You got two, again, in States and Canada.
It's
you got two, three, four
here.
Screens. You already got walls.
No, huge one, like this one.
50 inches a minimum.
You're missing point.
That's it. It's already here. You got seashells in your ears.
Yeah.
Right.
1 point.
Absolutely. Everything.
It's already here. Don't forget, we in here in Europe. There, it's a different world.
Yeah.
Very different.
I think also what we can maybe be remember in 10 years, TV is dying. TV is dying.
Yeah.
It's become
so
with TV right now. What's happened with the books 15 years
America.
Ago?
California.
Believe me, TV
Newark.
Is dying.
Oh,
everybody going to get
a
some
big,
own TV.
There
is not
going to
be like family room
and they
TV.
All
did you say that TV
have a walk
is
around?
Dying?
Yes.
Really? Do you think so?
Yeah, I'm definitely.
In America?
It's a rare thing,
and it's
isolated.
Yes.
Yes. Well, I actually tend to agree.
I didn't realize.
Because
I
Europe
America.
Is more conservative.
People.
No.
Asia still more conservative.
Yep.
Maybe so, but I don't see the decline of TVs in America. I go visit there. And
people watch TV.
They have six TVs on all
yeah,
the time.
Sorry, but you still not seen decline of books too. I don't see here.
Because you're surrounded
Diana,
by them.
She meant the cable. The cable's
well,
dead.
I don't own
cable,
a TV.
Yeah.
It, I don't
we cancel cable like
it's
you
not the
TV
dead.
We
it's
just
a cable
cancel
dead.
It.
It's Netflix.
Yeah, okay. But I don't even own a TV.
Right.
No,
you're not
neither.
Familiar with new technologies.
Maybe. Yeah.
Everybody gonna wear eyeglasses and watch own TV. In 10 years.
So medium
yeah,
is
I'm
already
saying,
replaced.
I'm saying in the position
yeah.
right now, as
I
the books was telling
it's
years
book. Don't forget,
it's
Europe.
TV.
Mm.
I
yes,
wanted to,
books,
book,
10 years
to
ago,
read
you
something,
you could
yeah.
predict
a little abstract.
Books going to die
yeah.
15 years ago. Let's say
Vitaly,
yeah.
No, no, it's okay, it's okay.
Yeah, but I, my opinion, now right now, having something slowly, you're not seeing this, but slowly it's starting with the TV too.
Do you think books are coming back into
no, never.
Vogue again, into
no,
position?
Something here is coming.
On the position which we knew, maybe no. But something about books in America. The best science fiction library, I think, it was library of Consular of Ambassador of U.S. ambassador in Ukraine. It's maybe
in the Ukraine.
Yes, he lived in the time I knew him.
in Ukraine. I don't know, unfortunately, where he is now. Okay. And it was library, only science fiction, because it's he is lover of science fiction. Maybe one and half this room.
Mm-hmm.
And understand me, it's library of people, of a person who must to move every 3 years. Oh. Every 3 years. It was the best science fiction library I've seen.
So he takes the books with him?
Yes.
Good
yes.
for him.
He is American, yes. Lulian. Of course, I think that the segment of people who love the books it is now and it will be in future. But it may be smaller.
Mm-hmm.
But I think that not smaller and smaller and smaller and after that no. It's some sector of
niche.
Of niche. It's niche. Yes, it's niche, and again, it's niche of plus minus rich people.
It's like LPs. It's the same thing. So LPs are in vogue again. So.
It's first, second.
2%.
Bradbury,
no.
when he wrote about of course, he didn't know about some psychical mechanism. We are very adaptable. It's our evolutionary.
Oh, I think he knew it. He described it.
And yes, but no. And just a minute. He looked on the people he knew, and he thought that Mildred's. It's like a diagnosis. Incurable diagnosis. For some people, yes. For some, no. Because we are very adaptable, and we may adaptable not only to e-books and not only for to TV. The more global, we are adaptable in the world of disfocused attention, where we are now. And our psychic is adaptable and productive in the situation after some changes, yes. And now we are not the people which were in the time of mid-century, for example. We are changed.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
But it's not that we are other than. But it's not the end of books. It's change of books and change of our perception of books.
Can I ask a question? What do you think? Why Emildre tried to commit suicide? Any opinion?
Excellent question. I thought about it. My theory is not completely formed, actually, but what I thought was that she did not.
Yeah, she did not.
I think that she was just trying to get to sleep.
Mm-hmm.
And later Montag himself describes this process. You take one,
yeah,
and you're still not asleep, and you forget that you take, and you take another, and you take another five, and in an hour you take another five, and you just already lost track, and you didn't count them all. I think it was not an attempt of a suicide.
No, I don't
think
so.
But if anybody else has another opinion, please feel free to share.
I think about other variant.
Very long time
it's close to yours, but different.
Me too.
Because the time where people change themselves.
Yes,
is a time where people change the perception of their own bodies.
Yesterday, I
and losing of
and
losing of contact with their body is a time where we don't understand something with us, and it's. It's not suicide in full sense of it, but is maybe she felt like not alive in full sense, and in this situation where she is not alive and she is not dead, it's not difficult to lose all control of this.
That's a great theory, but I'm afraid you're giving her too much credit. You are presuming deeper feelings that she's capable of.
Yeah.
Deeper thoughts, deeper feelings, deeper emotions. If it were another character, maybe. But for Mildred, I just don't think she's capable of. Although I like your point about the fact that they lose contact with their bodies. That's true, because they're not thinking what they're eating, how they're eating. Mm-hmm. Whether they sleep or not, how well do they sleep, they just, Mildred's, right? They just care about the family and what's happening with them, with their emotions, with their biology, psychology, all the health that we have. It's just not interesting. It's just, it's just not important.
It's not only not interesting. It's not, they have no sensual possibility to understand it. Their sense of science are blocked.
Yeah, that's true. This world
it's not about reflexia. It's not about the top level of psychology. It's about plus minus primitive. It's about sensual aspect of body. This aspect were lost, and in this situation, it's something like the kind of depression when sensual side are blocked. And you don't understand it. It's not deep depression, but it's depression too. In situation where when we are in the world castrated, of sensory aspect, the depression is inevitable.
Okay, one point before I move to the reading that I wanted to do, but this point of the world of the book is a complete opposite of sensual.
Yes.
All the senses are reduced. I don't know what your image was when you were reading, but I, while reading the book, saw everything as just gray. No colors, nothing beautiful.
No.
Exactly. Everything is absolutely
dark.
The same, dark, exactly,
no.
Gray, dark,
fire is
gloomy.
Beautiful. Fire is beautiful, and firemen and firemen love it. Do you remember it?
I do,
it's,
but
it's
I don't
only
think
one thing just, is beautiful.
I don't
fire.
Think they see it
destruction.
Beautiful.
Total destruction.
I don't think they
no.
see it.
Say,
I
don't
see
it.
It's
said it.
Mm-hmm.
She
yes.
said it. She said, fire is beautiful. I don't remember
the little
but
yeah.
he said about it.
But that's not my point.
Beautiful destruction.
All the senses are blocked. You don't see anything outstanding, everything is the same. You don't hear anything beautiful or pleasant or even different.
I must say. You who? You say you. You say
very
you.
A very general you. Ordinary.
Okay. All right.
Ordinary
people. Allow me. First of all.
And then you switch on your TV wall.
Yes,
and
yes,
you
yes.
see, and you feel, and you hear,
exactly,
and everything.
Exactly. So your approach, general approach here in the room is this. This is a bleak future, dystopian society, all is bad, right? I hated this book. I hate Bradbury, by the way. However, there's one thing I would like to note. He described in greater detail what's going to happen, and it did happen, in fact.
It did.
It did happen. So now, am I unhappy having 4 big screen TVs? No. Am I unhappy to have Android or iPhone with tons of music on it? No, I'm not. Right? What else? So, the first Mildred appearance. She is laying in the bed, right? So, guy gets into the room. So, and he describes what she experienced. Is it bad when you listen to Beethoven Fifth Symphony? No, it's not. So, just.
But she's not listening to Beethoven.
She listened to some music. We didn't know what. So we cannot judge her. It could be Beethoven.
Mm.
Could be Wagner.
Again.
We don't know.
Just a standard. You're giving her too much credit.
No.
Seriously.
What I'm saying, we don't know. We don't know what she's listening. So it's a stretch to say, we know she's an empty automata with no brains in her. It's a stretch. We don't know that because it's not written. See,
it's not written, but to...
Assumed? That's assumption. It's a huge, huge sin to assume something which is not written. Think about it. You're assuming. This is your personal opinion.
Yes,
but it's not written.
It's not written, but I understand why I think so. Because it's much harder to... it's not even about the fact that understanding Beethoven or Bach or such music is much harder than understanding just...
Allow me. It's not so. Some people say that listening to dark metal or death metal to this point, it's much more complicated than Beethoven. It's their opinion. We cannot deny this right.
So we cannot say
Beethoven
again,
is...
Again, I'm not talking about it. Why not? Death metal can also be good.
So the whole point I'm trying to make, think out of the box. Think about it. The future he described is here. Is it bleak? No, it's not bleak. I love being there, right? I love being in that future, right? I hated when I read it back in the 70s, right? That's a different story altogether, right?
And you are not in this future. Because now, the moment of dystopia is not the moment of a kind of music. The moment of dystopia is about a fireman who can go with you and destroy your home if you possess the books.
Okay, fine. So just today I saw on Facebook somewhere, I don't remember where, I think Rubens, naked woman, right? No breasts.
Mm-hmm.
Smurfed. It's already happening. It's already, if you're talking about, well, things which is forbidden, it's already here, but in hidden form.
It's context in one social net. It's not your home. And your home, you can...
Your castle? Are you serious?
I have no castle, unfortunately.
But
my home and my Facebook is not the same.
One moment. Book or notebook, it's not real. It's people who destroy your home is your different.
Yes.
Read book on anything
and
else,
now,
it's not really...
And now it's maybe right for some despotia, like in North Korea. But for most part of the world, is not right. It's not true.
No, the darker side is we can see now in the United States and Poland, in Hungary, that rise of fascism.
Yes,
mm-hmm.
Right.
Isn't not what he is predicted.
Mm-hmm.
But it was Cold War. Now it's just started the new, like very
mm-hmm.
dark.
Yes.
Things.
It's maybe.
That
it wasn't in the past. Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Yes. The suspect exists, but it's not about the same the road bridge. It's other part. It's other. It's.
I would like to read a few pages, if you don't
so
mind.
Okay.
Yes.
Yeah.
I
fire at your will.
You are welcome.
I found this
pun intended.
Part where BT explains how it all started. I will skip some paragraphs to just keep the explaining part.
Mm-hmm.
You probably remember that while he's talking, Mildred is rummaging around the room and finding the book, but we will skip that. And concentrate on the historical part. When did it all start, you ask, this job of ours? How did it come about? Where? When? Well, I'd say it really got started around about a thing called the Civil War. Even though our rule book claims it was founded earlier. If you remember, according to the rule book, the first fireman was Benjamin Franklin.
Benjamin Franklin.
Yeah. earlier. The fact is, we didn't get along well until photography came into its own. Then motion pictures in the early 20th century. Radio, television, things began to have mass. Montauk sat in bed, not moving. And because they had mass, they became simpler, said Beatty. Once, books appealed to a few people, here, there, everywhere. They could afford to be different. The world was roomy, but then the world got full of eyes and elbows and mouths. Double, triple, quadruple population. Films and radios, magazines, books leveled down to a sort of paste padding norm. Do you follow me? I think so. Picture it. 19th century man with his horses, dogs, carts, slow motion. Then, in the 20th century, speed up your camera. Books cut shorter, condensations, digests, tabloids, everything boils down to the gag, the snap ending. Snap ending, Mildred nodded. Classics cut to 15-minute radio shows, then cut again to fill a 2-minute book column, winding up at last as a 10 or 12-line dictionary resume. I exaggerate, of course, the dictionaries were for reference, but many were those whose sole knowledge of Hamlet. You know the title, certainly, Montauk. It's probably only a faint rumor of a title to you, Mrs. Montauk. It is not written, hmm?
Mm-hmm.
Seriously, he writes, it's right there.
Mm-hmm.
Whatever. Whole soul knowledge. We are not being assumptions.
No, we're not.
He wrote it.
Yes.
Her sole knowledge, as I say, of Hamlet was one-page digest in a book that claimed, now at least you can read all the classics. Keep up with your neighbors. Do you see? Out of the nursery into the college and back to the nursery. There's your intellectual pardon for the past 5 centuries or more. Mildred arose and began to move around the room, picking things up and putting them down. Betty ignored her and continued. Speed up the film, Monta. Quick. Click. Pick. Look. Eye. Now. Flick. Here. There. Swift. Pace. Up. Down. In. Out. Why? How? Who? What? Where? Eh? Oh. Bang. Smack. Wallop. Bing. Bone. Boom. Digest. Digests. Digest. Digests. Politics. One column. Two sentences. A headline. Then, in midair, all vanishes. Whirl man's mind around about so fast under the pumping hands of publishers, exploiters, broadcasters, that the centrifuge flings off all unnecessary, time-wasting thought. School is shortened. Discipline relaxed. Philosophies, histories, languages dropped. English and spelling gradually neglected. Finally, almost completely ignored. Life is immediate. The job counts. Pleasure lies all about after work. Why learn anything save pressing buttons, pulling switches, fitting nuts and bolts? The zipper displaces the button and man lacks just that much to think while dressing at dawn, a philosophical hour, and thus a melancholy hour. Life becomes one big pretful montage. Everything bend, bow and wow. Empty the theaters save for clowns and furnish the rooms with glass walls and pretty colors running up and down the walls like confetti or blood or sherry or sauterne. Then there is this talk about games, not important. More sports for everyone, ground spirit, group spirit, fun, and you don't have to think. Organize and super organize super sports. More cartoons and books, more pictures. The mind drinks less and less. Impatience. Highways full of crowds going somewhere, nowhere. The gasoline refugee. Towns run into motels. People in nomadic surges from place to place, following the moon tides, leaving tonight in the room where you slept this noon and I the night before. This part I like the most. Now let's take up the minorities in our civilization, shall we? Bigger the population, the more minorities. Don't step on the toes of the dog lovers, the cat lovers, doctors, lawyers, merchants, chiefs, Mormons, Baptists, Unitarians, second generation Chinese, Swedes, Italians, Germans, Texans, Brooklynites. Interesting, Brooklynites, Brooklyners.
I mean Brooklyners.
Brooklynites, Irishmen, people from Oregon or Mexico. The people in this book, this play, this TV serial are not meant to represent any actual painters, cartographers, mechanics anywhere. The bigger your market, Montag, the less you handle controversy. Remember that. All the minorities with their navels to be kept clean. Authors full of evil thoughts, lock up your typewriters. They did. Magazines became a nice blend of vanilla tapioca. Books, so the damned snobbish critics said, were dishwater. No wonder books stopped selling, the critics said. But the public, knowing what it wanted, spinning happily, let the comic books survive. And the three-dimensional sex magazines, of course. There you have it, Montag. It didn't come from the government down. There was no dictum, no declaration, no censorship to start with. No. Technology, mass exploitation, and minority pressure carried the trick, thank God. Today, thanks to them, you can stay happy all the time. You are allowed to read comics, the good old confessions, or trade journals. And this actually pretty much describes what's going on, doesn't it?
Yeah.
I mean, technology, mass exploitation, and minority pressure.
Okay. I need going now to work. But I have 2 points about old tales. 1 point. When we need paper books, children, it's normal copy what do he parents. And when when parents read the book, Children take book and read. It's natural process. When his parents read iPod, children take iPod and then he may play computer games, watch YouTube and yes, read on iPod. But need a good good upbringing. If we have, if we want children good read, and it's one point. And next point about change information. Paper book have changing in history, and a lot of time ago we have a big change paper book. When how say
handwriter
book change press book
to print press.
No, print press. Thank you. Sorry, I have. Very bad English. That's and next time we have it's more fast information and change people of all society, yes, and change social community and more many people who know read a press book now we have changed too. American student who take book for science
textbooks.
Yeah, textbooks. He pay many a lot of money and he. Slowly teaching anything, and many Chinese people who in 20th century now take a good book this time go Google and read anything, and this good engineer, good sciences now world is changing.
Chinese, remind me to tell about Chinese, very interesting point.
This is 2 points for me.
Okay,
thank you. This interesting thing.
Thank you for coming. Come again.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
I'm going to ask everyone before they go, if you give me your email, because I have events, would you give me an email?
You can do it.
Perfect. And I would just like to introduce Petya, who isn't able to stay either. She has a wonderful new bookshop, which is just a minute from here. It's called PI Books. And if you, it's absolutely wonderful. It's
thank
just
you.
A minute.
Thank you.
You. What's the address?
Bdin 1. Yes. We will invade the the place with books, with Diane here, books everywhere.
What language is that? Bulgarian?
Bulgarian, yes, that's good. It's for kids and young people mostly.
Yeah, that's good.
Just around the corner.
I have coffee, tea, and I'll make a little library as well.
Mm-hmm. What languages?
Bulgarian. Mm-hmm. But I'm intending to make a classroom with classes for languages and painting and
great.
It will be a club for kids.
And do you intend to teach language, Bulgarian, to teach?
Yes.
As a second language, yes. Definitely. Ready? Ready for me? Ready for rebuttal?
I had a thought, but it escaped. Okay, yes.
Right. Okay, so, whilst you're reading this part from the book, the main message you made, as far as I understand, there, that, and Beatty was making it, right?
Beatty
was his part. That information is shortening.
Yeah.
Okay. And it's presented in the book as it's something bad.
So before
in the golden age of society, it was great authors who wrote long books, and now it's only advertisements and financial topics, right? Fair enough. However, let's consider one part of the globe, China. Up to 1911, they didn't even have normal Peking dialect, which is now Mandarin.
Yeah.
They got Wenyang. So what is it, Wenyang? They didn't have grammar at all because it's analytical language, right? And all great literature, Chinese literature, and mind you, now we got what, 1.5 billion people of Chinese, right? So, and how many Americans have got 300 million, I think, yeah. Yeah, plus 30 million Canadians, so 33, so plus what, British, 50 million, so peanuts. Anyway, so the great civilization somehow survived up to 1911, up to the revolution, writing in Wenyang, which is very short and abrupt, virtually no grammar, seriously, no tenses at all, no tenses in the verb. No declension in nouns, nothing. Moreover, take any Chinese worker, say, in downtown of any new American or Canadian city, right? So normal Anglo-Saxon or, sorry for saying that, or any English natively, I'm looking at that, natively speaker wouldn't understand Chinese. The sole reason is because he or she is too short for him. For example, would you be so kind, so and so, please provide me with these documents? The answer is no. That's the real story. So their way of thinking is very short comparing to our Western civilization.
That's extremely interesting point, because what we are discussing here is, of course, European civilization, Christian civilization. What he's describing, absolutely, it. I don't think it applies to Asia,
Eastern civilization.
Give me one word.
So, what I'm thinking is koans in Buddhism, Chen Yui in which is four letters, proverbs, and it's a basis of Chinese civilization, right? So we don't have it in our well-spoken literature or way of thinking, European.
That's true,
yep.
But again, this is another culture, and since Bradbury is considering only European culture, for him, of course, going from long to short is a bad thing.
Mm-hmm.
When we are starting to add China into equation, of course, everything changes.
Just one word. The reason I said that, because I was honestly trying to read the guy today, like, trying not to fall asleep every 5 or so minutes. The reason is, I'm so used to Chinese way of thinking, because I'm studying Chinese, right? So to me, anything beyond 4 words, it's already, what the hell are you talking about? Why you need so many words? Just say it. He, she, object, subject, that's it. That's
it's
all you need.
Phenomenon of this focus of attention.
That's what I'm saying.
And could be. To support him, I think this whole country. And whole
which one?
China.
Okay.
And whole
sorry,
country
you just had to
who
make
is
sure.
Not interested in this history and these books at all. It's Africa. They're not interested in these books and they're not interested in this culture, which is he explained.
Absolutely. Agreed, 100%.
And
100%.
Actually, they are growing. They are shrinking.
Yep. We're dying nation. We're already
dying.
Dead. We're already dead. We just don't know.
Well, Europeans, yeah.
But one detail also to support Shanti. Stas told me in China they were thinking about their engineers. That Chinese engineers can do whatever, they can copy anything that European or American engineers have already made, but by some reason they can't make anything new. And they were trying to understand why, and
they are good engineer, but they have no innovator. Then that is neat.
And so they tried to understand what is different in engineers that can do something, some innovations, and why they can't. They noticed only one thing, which is common for all engineers which make new things, that in their childhood they were reading science fiction, lots of science fiction, love science fiction. And
and they grew creative.
Yes.
And in China they didn't have it, or they have it forbidden. I don't really remember. Maybe Tante remembers the story better.
That books were forbidden. Now it's not, but they were, and the result we all may see. As I think it's from Neil Gaiman, which, of course, our magazine had an interview with him, and he said that it's a very strong correlation between the amount of libraries, of school libraries, of library where the children, the people may read the books, and the level of prison, the people in prison after 20 years. Very strong correlation.
So the more libraries, the less people go to prison.
Right. Neil Gaiman.
Well, he's a known advocate of libraries. He wrote a lot about it.
Just one moment. I lost my job. I moved to Bulgaria because I lost my job. I'm a librarian, and a new vice president came in and said, why we need the library if we have a Google?
Pence?
He's a vice president.
The current one, Pence.
I work with him another 2 years. I try to present that without the library it's a bad thing, but finally they close it.
This was in America.
In America, of course. And in
same
America,
wait,
so many library closing,
right.
So many
it
public library
right.
Become the entertainment places.
Mila. You work in not a public library. You
not not a public
in professional
medical library.
Library.
No,
but
I call about
even this quote.
The profession. The librarian is dying profession. It's dying.
She support.
This is why this book is so like.
It's very
so
important
true.
For doctor to
yes.
be up on the line.
What I liked. I noticed here on the cover, on the back of the cover, it says the terrifyingly prophetic novel of a post-literate future. And I so liked the phrase post-literate future.
We are living right now.
Yes, it's just a beautiful phrasing. A society that is, before it was a society that was not yet literate, then literate, and then already not literate. So today we are moving to the society that is already not literate. We are past that.
You're not right. In Soviet Union, back to my years living there, it was literate society. Remember?
Yes, back
people,
then.
Yeah, back
but
then.
Back then.
Yeah.
But now.
People very value book.
Yes.
Remember?
Yeah,
the
I know. I know.
Year,
I grew up in a family
exactly.
where
everybody,
books were everywhere.
Everybody,
yes.
All parents try to get a small
yes.
library in a. In
yes, but it was back
the
then.
But this is literacy time.
And it's ending.
Remember we discussed it 2 months ago?
Yeah.
Exactly the same topic.
Exactly.
It is
ending. And
it
we are coming back to it again and again.
Yeah, yeah,
but
right.
I think that we're kind of mixing something. I want to go back to the beginning of our discussion, a book as an object and a book as a content, as a source of content. And we keep discussing that people don't read paper books today, I mean in real life, but they are less and less interested in the content too. Mm-hmm.
This is why he said that political books is more interesting than Shakespeare.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
but
emotions.
Maybe it's a suggestion.
Yeah, but
it's an assumption, I would even say. But at least politics is somehow related to
or financial.
Why read at least it is somehow related to the everyday life.
Right.
Somehow. Even very remotely, well, financial topics directly, but politics sometimes very remotely.
Political books given a chance to books to survive because people still.
Well, at least
them.
They're reading
they're
something.
They're holding and holding them as a.
What about Harry Potter?
No.
What about Game of Thrones?
Right.
What about
us and us and us?
What about them?
Most of them
most popular,
are
popular
more popular as
yeah.
sales than as books. Even if
yes,
book Game of Thrones is very good,
it's
sales is awful.
It's some argument
yes.
that actually didn't start it. We're not arguing. Some very different arguments that appear to contradict each other. I'm not denying that in Soviet Union people read a lot. I'm not denying that Harry Potter and Game of Thrones, bless them, are popular books. That's not what I'm saying. I'm saying that today, November 17th, 2018, people are moving away from the books.
From the object?
At least
yes.
at least they
the
are still reading
it
politics.
On,
politics
it
books.
On. Because,
exactly.
okay,
you're not exactly right. They're not moving, they move maybe in different directions. That's we try
yes,
to
that's but why? That's what I'm saying.
They
are moving from books to another source of
information. We're losing the point. The point that interesting is the book. What is this book about? What is this book about? I think it's a book about humanity. I think it's a book about intellectual. You know, things that people losing, they not interested in emotion, which you can read in a book.
Mm-hmm.
It's about humanity,
yes.
I think. Maybe you have different, but
this book is about humanity, more or less. About
science
people not
fiction, most of all, are for humanity, the classical science fiction. with Ray Bradbury, of course, it's about humanity, and John Wyndham and all that, Isaac Asimov and everything. It's about humanity, of course, and it's with positives, with all positives at the
all
end.
They believed,
right.
Yeah,
yes.
Golden
and,
Age
and
science
this
fiction,
is,
fiction
and
believed
this is
in humanity, that's
most,
true.
Most, I think that the civilization is our most precious thing for the humanity as well, and I think that the books of Bradbury and this is the highest level that we should keep it, the civilization, and with that books there is no civilization, no matter the form of the book, no matter how the means that you will use to reach them.
Mm-hmm.
This is the first thing that kids and everything must
mm-hmm.
see before get to sleep, and the last thing that you know what I want to say, the first thing in the morning and the last thing before get to sleep, and this is our culture. And you surprised me, maybe you are most Russian here.
Right,
yes.
Russian
speakers, okay. I didn't expect it to hear that because Diana told me Bradbury, and that book I know her very well. And you surprised me. You surprised me very much. I really love Russian culture.
But you lived in Russia for a long time.
But I was surprised. I really was surprised. I didn't expect that.
Expect what?
I didn't expect to speak about China, about the society, about
yeah, well,
China. What here in Europe? Russians, Bulgarian. What China?
Yeah, our meetings have this tendency to move from the topic to
I missed the beginning, of course,
topics.
And I was crumpled. I'm sorry, I was at the shop.
Yeah,
that's
true.
But it was very nice to meet you, and it's you make wonderful things here with books and everything.
Thank you, and thank you for coming.
Likewise.
Yes.
And actually, using this occasion, I would like to return to the book and stop speaking about China. And, there is one thing we barely touched in our discussions. We did a little thanks to Andrew, but then moved elsewhere. Mildred, poor TV walls, people not reading, people not interested in emotions, etc., etc., etc. We said all that. And yet, at some point, one certain fireman steals a book, and then another, and he keeps them, and he hides them
mm-hmm.
from his wife,
mm-hmm.
from everybody,
mm-hmm.
and then at some point, as they say, the quantity became quality. And at some point he realizes that he has to do something. And he thinks of a certain person who made a great impression and who just might be a person who reads books. And he finds the contact of this person and he goes to this person and he starts doing something. It's quite silly, actually, what he's doing, right? It's not strategic, it's not thought through, it's just some random things. Plus, he's very emotional, and he has this rage that almost ruins everything. But he keeps going. And then he goes further. And then he decides that he has to do more, and then he runs, and then he finds people who think the same, and thanks to them he discovers another way, not
putting books in other firemen houses and calling in alarms. But what we already talked about, keeping the content, not keeping the form, but keeping the content with any means necessary. And then maybe, just maybe, in 10 years, in 20 years, in 50 years, they will be able to write something down. But even this is not that important. The important thing is that they will tell their children and their grandchildren the information, the content that they found in those books. And this actually makes a very hopeful ending, that humanity will go on.
Right.
With or without books.
Yes.
With or without TV. With or without internet. Or what comes next after the internet. We don't know that yet.
Yes.
But this information, this content, these emotions, this what makes us human, will go on. And that makes it a very hopeful book.
Right.
Next,
right.
Next
right.
is going to be artificial intellect.
Probably. We'll see.
Yeah.
That's
in
great,
20
that's
years.
A great ending. Thank you.
Okay, I just have a few words to say.
Sorry, I must go.
Okay, thank you for coming.
Thank you
for coming, and hope to see you again. I just want to say a couple of words. Thank you again for coming and spending this evening with us. It's very precious. It's an enormous gift for us. I invite you tomorrow to join our Russian speaking meeting in Yasnaya Polyana Library, Prague Street 9. Tomorrow at 3, we meet to discuss Masons.
Yeah.
What?
Masons.
Freemasons.
Oh. Masonry. And War and Peace, actually. And China, probably, but we'll see. It will be interesting. Seriously, join us tomorrow. And please like our page on Facebook. It's called Перелетный чердак. We post very interesting articles. Just today we published an article about spells in Harry Potter.
That was a good one. I liked it.
Thank you. That's very kind. And join our group on Facebook, which is called Stillwater Book Club, Литературный клуб Тихий Омут, where we publish, where we publish announcements of further meetings. We really hope that English meetings, English speaking meetings, will go on. We'll see about that.
Yes.
So please follow us to learn about our further meetings, and I really hope to see you tomorrow to speak about
what
Masons.
Thank
three
you very much.
At 3. Thank you so much for coming, and bye, and see you again.